my goal here is to lay the groundwork for some of the later talks on climate change and climate science. I was a co-author with Bruce Maxwell on the 2017 Montana Climate Assessment. So a lot of the stuff I'm going to talk about here is just results from that climate analysis. If you guys are interested in more details on that, you can go to montanaclimate.org, and there's a whole website there with quite a bit of the information there. So I'll start from the very beginning here. What is climate? So, you know, kind of a basic question, but a lot of times we get confused. And so it's really important to just start off with the basics. You know, I define it as the average weather patterns over a region over a specified period of time. And usually that time period is like 30 years. So we're talking about really long periods of time. So average weather over a large spatial area and over a large period of time. And the World Meteorological Organization defines about 50 different climate variables. So, you know, some of these are ones we know about, temperature, precip, wind. Others are maybe things we don't think about as often, like snow and ice and land cover, soil moisture. But we do tend to really focus on temperature and precip. And that's what I'll focus on here in this talk and sort of a big focus of the climate assessment. So how about climate change? Well, you know, it's really important to remember that all climate variables, temperature, precip, wind, they go up and down. And so when you're talking about climate change, you really want to cut through that year-to-year, day-to-day, month-to-month, decade-to-decade noise. So what we're really, and so that noise can come in different frequencies. Some can be every year, some can be 5 to 10 years, some can be multi-decadal. But what we're really interested when we're talking especially about human-caused climate change is what that trend looks like over an extended period of time, again, about 30 years or more. And of course, we're also interested in how the variability around that trend might be changing. What causes climate change? Well, of course, there's lots of natural causes to climate change. Sea surface temperatures oscillate. That affects the climate. Volcanic eruptions affect the climate. But I think what I'm here to talk about is about how we affect the climate. And so the main way we affect the climate is by increasing greenhouse gases. So the greenhouse gas effect is quite natural, quite normal, and quite important. Without it, we could not live on this planet. It would be way, way, way too cold. So these greenhouse gases in the atmosphere, they trap heat, they make things comfortable and livable. It's what humans have adapted to live within. So they're really important. But the problem is as these greenhouse gases increase in the atmosphere from CO2 and methane and other emissions from industry, that heat trapping ability increases as well. And so those temperatures begin to rise. And so the analogy I like to use is imagine a cold day in Bozeman and you put a sweater on and maybe a jacket and you go out and you feel pretty comfortable. So that's kind of like our natural greenhouse gases. But the problem is if I asked you to add another layer, another jacket, another big puffy coat and keep adding them, eventually it doesn't really matter how cold it is outside, you start to get really warm. And so that's essentially what we're doing with our greenhouse gases and our carbon emissions. So let's talk about carbon. Carbon dioxide is our main greenhouse gas emission. We know that it is increasing in the atmosphere. We've been measuring it since 1958 over in Hawaii. To the left, you can see this is what that measurement looks like in the atmosphere. It goes on past 2010, obviously, and we're up over 400 parts per million. And so this increasing carbon and CO2 is a greenhouse gas, and it traps the heat that I was referring to. So carbon dioxide makes up about 82% of all the greenhouse gases. And, you know, we know where carbon dioxide comes from. It comes from industry. It comes from our cars and airplanes and those sorts of things. But there's other greenhouse gases, too. There's methane. Methane only makes up about 10% of all our greenhouse gas emissions, but it traps about 20 times the heat of CO2. And then there's also nitrous oxide coming fertilizer and agriculture and other industrial processes. And this only makes up about 5% of greenhouse gases, but it traps about 300 times the heat of CO2. So these other greenhouse gases from other industry is also really important to consider when we're thinking about climate change and how we're impacting the atmosphere. Okay, so how do we know this is true rather than just trusting me here? At this point, it's really pretty basic science. And of course, it's a complex problem and there's lots of nuances and complexities in it. But the science that supports it has been around for over 100 years. We've known about climate change and our effects on it for the last 40 years. It really comes down to just a few things. You know, one, like I said, we're measuring carbon dioxide in the atmosphere. We know it's increasing. We know it's increasing exponentially. So very simple observational science here. And we know through simple experiments that carbon dioxide and other greenhouse gases trap heat. So this is just a really simple experiment anybody can do. You can get, and there's a YouTube example of it, but you get two 2-liter bottles. You fill one up, fill them both up halfway with water. One of them, you put an Alka-Seltzer tablet that releases CO2. You put a cap on it. The other one, you leave it with just water, stick a thermometer in there and a heat lamp on them and measure the temperature. And you'll see a really big difference between those two closed systems. So we know that there's this relationship between greenhouse gases and temperature. And finally, we know that temperature is increasing across the globe. So this is, it's kind of funny when you do this with the climate change stuff, like every year we have a new way to visualize the same data. So this is like this year's way of visualizing global climate change. So from left to right, the blue, it goes from about 1850 to 2017, and these are global temperatures. So the blues representing obviously cooler temperatures, the reds warmer temperatures. So you can see the last 20, 30 years, those last 20, 30 stripes, they're all red. This change is happening very quickly and it's unprecedented for our time. When you combine the fact that we know our greenhouse gas emissions are increasing, we're measuring them, and you know that there's this relationship, and then we're observing it, the science gets really simple to understand what's causing these changes. Okay, so I've talked a lot about temperature. There are some other things that that is impacted by climate change, precipitation being the other one, or another one. So temperature's increasing. We know that from our observations. This affects our hydrologic cycle in a number of different ways. We consider these impacts sort of second order. So first order being temperature, meaning that greenhouse gas emissions are increasing. That directly traps more heat, which directly increases temperature. That increase in temperature then affects precipitation. So how does it do that? Well, as temperature increases, evaporation from the Earth's surface and transpiration of vegetation also increases. And that decreases soil moisture. That soil moisture goes up into the atmosphere as water vapor, so it increases water vapor. The ability of the atmosphere to hold water increases with temperature, so we can hold more water as temperatures rise. And that tends to lead to more precipitation. So that's the general relationship here. But when we look at climate change projections over the next 100 years or so, you can see it's not quite constant across the globe. At least that's what we think, because precipitation is fairly complex and there's lots of factors other than just temperature rise impacting them. So this is just a figure from NOAA. The blue areas are areas where precipitation is expected to increase, and the brown areas are where precipitation is expected to decrease. If you can squint your eyes, look here in Montana, you'll see we are kind of at a transition. It means there's a little bit more uncertainty about what's going to happen here in Montana in terms of precip, and I'll talk about that in a little bit. So what about Montana? Well, the story here in Montana is very similar. We have seen increasing temperature across the state. This is from NOAA going back to 1895. We've seen about a 2 degree Fahrenheit increase over that time period. So raise your hand in this room if you were born after 1996. Okay. You guys in Montana have never actually seen an average or annual temperature year in Montana. That was the last time we had average annual temperatures in the state of Montana. So so we are definitely seeing this here in Montana, and it's following very similar trends to those across the globe. Precipitation, well, it's this second order effect, like I was saying. So perhaps we're not quite seeing the impacts that we are projecting to see right now. Historically, we haven't seen big changes over the entire year. And of course, precip is a little bit more nuanced in that, you know, when you get precip matters and snowpack matters and all that stuff. And there are some changes there. But when you average it across the year, it tends to look pretty flat as far as that trend goes. All right, so talked a lot about the past. Now let's talk about the future here in Montana. But before I do, you know, have to lay a little bit of some ground rules for how we get our estimates or projections for what's gonna happen in the future. So historically, it's easy. We observe it. We've got weather stations and other sensors around on the globe and around the state that are retrieving information in real time, and we can observe it. In fact, I always tell people, you know, if you doubt these increasing trends in temperature, go to your NOAA website, go to your closest weather station, download that data, and draw a line through it, and you'll see an increasing trend. It's pretty consistent across Montana. And these data are available publicly. However, when we start to talk about what's gonna happen in the future, we no longer get to observe that. So we have to use models and computer models. And essentially these are just a series of physics and chemistry equations that are complex and put together in a way that is better suited for computers to solve. But they're based on the principles that we've known about for, you know, hundreds of years at this point. So there's some rules to it. The first one is thou shall not rely on just one model. So we don't look at just one model because essentially this is one single estimate. Usually these models come from some academic or research institution from some place around the globe. So we look at anywhere from 20 to 40 different models. These are all independent models from independent research institutes. And we generally look at the central trend of those 20 to 40 models. And that's what I'll be presenting to you today. But the nice thing is, beyond just the central tendency of those models, we get to see a variability. So as you can see, all these squiggly lines, those are all single model projections. But you can see there's this uncertainty around that. And that gives us a little bit of an idea of how confident we can be in these projections. Next, thou shalt not rely on just one future scenario. So what's going to happen in the future? You know, are we going to curb our carbon emissions, or are we going to continue business as usual? We tend to not care whether how we do it. So these different scenarios, they don't care whether it's policy or technology or whatever. They just care about our carbon emissions. And so we look at four of these. They're labeled RCPs, which stands for Representative Concentration Pathways. In our assessment, we focused on just two. That was the RCP 4.5 scenario. This one assumes that we do figure things out by mid-century. And then there's an RCP 8.5 scenario, which assumes kind of business as usual, which is the trajectory we are currently on. So that is the scenario that I will be presenting to you guys today, but there are other potential scenarios that are better off than the results that I'm gonna show you today. There's also a 2.6 scenario. This is one that essentially assumes that we already started to curb our carbon emissions, and for obvious reasons, we don't really use this one anymore because we have surpassed that scenario. And then lastly, thou shalt not predict for a single time or place. So climate is the average over a long period of time, and it's the average over a large spatial area. So we average things over 30 years, and then we also look at larger spatial domains. We use climate divisions here. We have 7 of them in the state of Montana, so that's how I'm gonna present the results. But you can imagine you could do it over the county scale, or other spatial watershed is another thing that we talked about, but in here we use climate divisions. Okay, so here's some of the results. These are mid-century projections, so 30-year average around 2050, and this is that RCP 8.5 scenario, or the business as usual scenario. What you're seeing is the projected change from historical conditions in all of these figures. So we're looking across the state, it's actually kind of a boring figure because it's all the same color, because all the climate divisions, when you average them out over the year, are looking at about a 5 to 6 degree increase in temperature across averaged over the year. Now, of course, I said we look at lots of different models. So we do have a spread among those models, and that's what this figure is showing. So we're here in the Southwest climate division. So you can focus just on that rectangle, and what that's showing you is the spread within those models. So as far as change goes, so the top line is the model that projects the largest difference. The bottom line is the model that projects the smallest difference. The middle line is the numbers I just showed you. What's important to notice here is that all of the climate divisions and all of the models are showing changes above zero. So while there is discrepancy among how much temperature might change, we actually have 100% agreement among all the models globally from many different research institutions, and they all say temperature will increase here in the state of Montana. So we actually have quite a bit of confidence that this is a change, not only that we've seen in the past, but we'll continue to see in the future. Okay, so we can look at other metrics. This is number of days above 90 degrees Fahrenheit. So these are the number of days per year that are pretty hot. So in this 90 degrees, that's the maximum temperature, so when those max temperatures in the middle of the day really get going. You can see in the eastern part of the state, we're looking at about a month difference by mid-century, and in the western and southwest part, we're looking at more like couple weeks to 3 weeks difference. Change in the number of freeze-free days. These are the days that used to freeze and are projected to no longer freeze. A fairly important metric if you're a farmer or a skier or snowboarder. So here, western part of the state and southwest where we are, bigger changes than the eastern part of the state, actually looking at over a month and a half difference there. And then in the eastern part of the state, still looking at upwards of a month difference in those number of freeze-free days. Now, of course, I've been looking at average annual conditions, but we can also break this up by month. So here you can see vertically, those are those different climate divisions. Let's see, if you focus on the third one down, that's southwest, that's where we are, and you go across, those are the projected changes for each month of the year. Again, all orange, all increasing, but bigger increases in the summer. And we'll probably talk a little bit more about that later in the presentation, but it's important to note right now that that's where we're projected to see our biggest increases in temperature. All right, precipitation. Like I said, increases in temperature, increases in evapotranspiration, increases in water holding capacity of the atmosphere leads to often increases in precipitation. And so that's what we're projecting here in the state across the year. So again, averaged across the year, we're looking at increases in precipitation, the green showing positive, the brown, which we don't see, showing negative. So about 8 to 10% change here. We can also look at those really big rain events. So this is the number of days above 1 inch of rain. And you can see also these days of intense rain are also projected to increase across the state. And then we can look at the number of consecutive dry days. And this is kind of a metric for drought, although drought is very, very complicated, so I won't simplify it down to just this. And you'll see, yeah, it's increasing, but if you look at that scale, it's really not by much. So that's not even a day. And in the eastern part of the state, it's basically zero. And then when you look at those models, so again, focus on the second one over, the southwest area. That's the spread among the models. You can see that they're now straddling that zero change line. So that means we've got about 50% of the models saying we'll see an increase in consecutive dry days, and 50% of the models saying we're going to have a decrease. So as a climate scientist, we say this is one we don't really have a lot of confidence in right now. Okay, so we've seen a lot of green, a lot of increasing, but when we break this up by months, we start to see some brown or some decreasing precipitation trends. So southwest, third one down, you can see June, July, August, September, these are all projected to be decreasing less than we normally get as far as rain in the summer months. And remember, this aligns with when we're supposed to be seeing our largest increases in heat. So what does this all mean? Well, it's really hard to say, to be honest. But and I think we're going to, you know, my goal here is to lay the groundwork. And then I think we're going to have some other folks after me talking about what this means specifically in ag and ecology. And they'll get into some of the more details. But, you know, staying kind of big and overarching, high level, the way I like to think about it is let's go back to 2017. And if you guys remember 2017, these were the conditions for that year. So on the left, this is winter. On the top, it's temperature. And then the bottom is precip. On the right, that's summer. And these are comparisons with average conditions. So what you see is in the winter, we saw above normal temperatures, but we saw above normal precipitation. So when we went into the winter and spring, lots of water, everybody felt really great. And remember, that's sort of the winter and spring conditions that we're projecting by mid-century. Now, if you go to the summer, we saw even more increases in temperature across the state from average. And then we saw big decreases. In fact, it was like the second driest summer on record that year. This aligns, unfortunately, very nicely with what we're projecting for the average conditions for mid-century. So it serves as sort of a proxy for what we might see in terms of conditions. And if you remember, this was not a super fun summer to be here in Montana. If you're in the western part of the state, a lot of smoke, a lot of wildfire. If you're in the eastern part of the state, major drought. In fact, you know, this sort of, we coined the term flash drought after this year because it really happened quicker than anybody expected, and myself included. I actually learned a ton this year because I thought that all this rain that we were projected to get in winter and spring would offset some of the decreases in the summer. And I learned a really valuable lesson that when you have really hot temperatures and you have snowmelt that goes like that, it doesn't matter so much how much rain we get in the winter and spring. So we really have to consider this seasonality in terms of our water resources and what those impacts might be. So what can we do about it? I think when I was first asked to give this talk, I said, this is where we should be starting the conversation rather than where I'm ending the conversation. So I really think, you know, at this point, if you don't believe in climate change, you don't think it's important, there's nothing I can say as a scientist to change your mind. And if you do, well, then we already know enough to be doing stuff about it. We've known enough for a really long time. So I really think we need to start moving the conversation to right here. And I will attempt to get a bit on my soapbox, and I apologize for that, because it's not something I do a lot, but I do think it's really important. So you know, the first thing I think we can do about this is take personal responsibility. I think I think this is critical. I think a lot of times we say, oh, well, you know, if the world's not changing, then why should I change? But it really does start with the individual, and I think this is an important place to put emphasis. And, you know, I read a really interesting quote from Yuval Noah Harari, who's this, like, well-known Israeli historian, and it was on another topic, but it was, I thought it was a great quote, and see if I can remember. It was, our supreme moral imperative is the imperative to know. And I thought that was really great, because this is something we can all do. The imperative to know. This is our imperative, our moral imperative to understand where our energy comes from, where our water comes from, where our food comes from, where our waste goes to. All of this information, we need to understand it, because ignorance isn't really bliss, it's just ignorance. So I think this is a really good place to start, and it starts, you know, right here in these types of conferences and meetings. Education and outreach. Again, we're doing it. If you're here today, we're doing it. So, you know, check next to this box, and let's keep it up, because this is a really important part of the solution. Science and technology. Unfortunately, I think we've kind of surpassed our ability to make big changes globally without science and technology. I think there's going to have to be big contributions from this field, and we need to be investing in it. I say to the students here, find a career that helps this problem, or especially doesn't hurt it. And those of you who aren't students and are professionals, find a way within your career to make changes. I think everybody has to be working towards this solution. And it doesn't mean everybody has to be a climate scientist. You know, if you're a lawyer, work on environmental problems. If you're a business person, think about circular economies. You know, there's lots of ways to get at this, but I think we all need to be ready to try and solve this. And finally, elect people who care about this issue, because as much as all this bottom-up stuff is important, the top-down is equally important, and we have to have people in leadership positions that really care about this, because it's a big issue. Okay, so I'll leave on this note. In October of last year, you guys might have heard the United Nations and the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change came out with a new report, special report, 15, 1, 5. Basically, this report says that there is a big difference as far as the way Earth will look if we keep our planet's warming to 1.5 degrees Celsius rather than let it go above 2 degrees Celsius and above. They said, oh, by the way, we have about 12 years to do this if we want to do it. So this is sort of a cry for help from the global scientific community, saying it is now that we have to be making changes, and that these changes really matter for what Earth will look like in the future. So here we are. This goes back to that really fancy line plot that I showed you, the new way to visualize climate change. We're right here in the middle of this crossroads. Right now, we have a choice. We can keep going up, or we can start doing things to make a difference. And I will leave the conversation on that note, and I think we'll have hopefully a really interesting day talking about ways that we can make differences. So thank you very much.